You're listening to Catch the Current, the coolest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent News, your trusted source for seafood prices, news, and data. I'm Amanda Buckle, recording this episode from beautiful and extremely humid Cartagena, Colombia, where Undercurrent News has just spent the past 2 days reporting on the Global Seafood Alliance's Responsible Seafood Summit. And while I don't have my seafood bestie and co-host Lauren Castiglione with me, as promised, reporter Jacob Resnick is stepping in.
Good afternoon.
So Jacob and I have a lot to get through, but before we get started, a quick thank you to our sponsor, Wise Fish. For more than 30 years, Wise Fish has helped seafood businesses simplify the way they work. From aquaculture and wild catch to processing and sales, Wise Fish brings everything together in one integrated platform. Find out more at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent.
Hello, Catch the Current listeners. I'm Lauren Castiglione, and for the first time in the history of our podcast, and likely not our last, I must issue a disclaimer. I was not on this trip to Cartagena for the Responsible Seafood Summit with Amanda. Therefore, I was unable to monitor her caffeine intake. As we all know, she's a fast talker to begin with, but it turns out that when she consumes more than 3 cups of Colombian coffee in the span of a few hours, she's nearly impossible to keep up with. So brace yourselves, seafood friends, set your playback at half speed, and maybe grab yourself another cup of coffee before you listen to this episode. And this is why we are a package deal, Tom.
So Jacob, this was your first Responsible Seafood Summit, correct?
So that's right.
So let's hear your immediate thoughts. Let's go.
Well, I've learned a lot about aquaculture. I know the GSA was originally an aquaculture organization, then they broadened their scope in 2021, I think. I'm impressed by how much they have had here on the wild capture stuff, and that's more where my expertise is. But I've really enjoyed actually like learning more about the different farm species and how that impacts the global markets.
I know we were talking about this earlier, talking about how GSA used to just focus on aquaculture, and it's a lot to jam-pack into these 2 days, but they somehow did it. I mean, they didn't stay on schedule. We missed lunch a little bit, but they surely got everything in. So this was my second GSA summit, actually. I've been to, the first was in St. John, Canada 2 years ago, and I have to admit, St. John and Cartagena weren't on my bucket list of places to visit. But what I really love about GSA's Responsible Seafood Summit is that it emphasizes the culture of the city and the country you're in. And GSA kicked off the event this year with an awesome drum and dance performance. And then from there, like I said, it would just go, go, go with all the content. So day one, before I talk about my big highlight, we should probably mention that the theme of the meeting this year was, what's your impact? And the focus on sustainability. So a lot of the presentations revolved around that, but the big highlight for me was the Rabobank Global Shrimp Production Survey and Forecast from Gorjan Nikolic. He's a senior seafood analyst at Rabobank. His presentations are always highly anticipated. And this conference, he said that the global farm shrimp growth is slow going, but still respectable. So Gorjan noted that Ecuador, China, India, and Vietnam, they remain the main players, with Ecuador holding the title as the world's largest producer in Rabobank's estimates. And again, these are compiled based on Rabobank's own forecast, data from the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, FAO, and a GSA survey. So Ecuador has reached 15% growth in its historical run. And while it initially seemed like the country's success story would end in 2024, the projections ultimately proved wrong. And Gorjan said that the projection for this year is a 10% growth in Ecuador, but he says he thinks 10% is actually on the lower side, and he says it's closer to 15%. And he said, and I quote, "Ecuador is back, back in a big way." So at the same time, U.S. tariffs have also been having a big impact on Ecuador's shrimp exports to China. Yahira Piedrahita, the executive director of Ecuador's National Chamber of Aquaculture, was another speaker to take the stage on Tuesday to talk shrimp, and she told attendees that Ecuador's biggest market is China, not the U.S., which I didn't realize. The U.S., she says, it exports about 25% of its shrimp to. And she said that U.S. President Donald Trump's tariffs have forced other exporting shrimp countries to turn to new markets, including China. So she said that this has forced Ecuadorian producers to lose market shares and work double, adding a lot of uncertainty. So that was quite a way to kick off the event.
Yeah, I mean, when I was asking what I need to do before, when I come to this GSA thing, the marching orders I got from above was listen to Gorjan Nikolic. Gorjan is the guy who does these surveys, he does these projections, And he spoke a lot of kind of the same thing with groundfish. You know, global tilapia production has really strong. It's about to surpass 7 million metric tons. And the issue, though, there is, you know, China is a big producer. The two big producers are China and Indonesia. China exports, Indonesia feeds its domestic market. There's real concern, though, with the tariffs between the U.S. and China, where will this tilapia go? And there's been a lot of really good growth in the developing world, especially like in Africa. We have these smaller tilapia producers. And Goran said he was concerned that if this tilapia has to find a new market, you know, you get some, like, you know, relatively cheap tilapia dumped into the developing world, and that could be, you know, very destabilizing and very, very bad for those small scale producers. And then there's another fish that I can't pronounce, Pangasius.
Pangasius, you did it, you nailed it.
I did it. Okay. Yeah, Pangasius, you know, it's a kind of a catfish like species. That's also really, really strong production, nearly 6% up projected in 2025. But much like tilapia, the U.S. tariffs in Asia and Southeast Asia could really upend the global market because, for, you know, Vietnam is a big producer of Pangasius, and it's one of its major customers are in the U.S. And there's like a 20% tariff, I think, went in July. So that could make Pangasius, you know, not as competitive. And so we really have to see what the fallout, what that could be. So there's some red flags there. Mm-hmm. Then the other thing that Goran talked about was Atlantic salmon. You know, as an Alaska reporter, always very, you know, want to see what the salmon market's doing, because Atlantic salmon does compete in the market with wild-caught Pacific salmon. He called 2025 the year of the salmon. And the reason for that was Atlantic salmon production in 2025 is projected to grow almost 9%, you know, and that's after several years of really poor performance. The really interesting takeaway there is there's the big four Atlantic salmon producing countries are traditionally Norway, Chile, Scotland, and Canada. But Canada's been bumped by the tiny Faroe Islands, which is...
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, it's like a autonomous territory of Denmark, mm-hmm. In the North Atlantic. Been there once before. Amazing, amazing place. But yeah, Faroe Islands, they've really been ramping up their salmon production. So,
well, when you take into account, too, what's going on in Canada, I know Lisa, our fellow reporter at Undercurrent, she covers a lot of this area for us, so we're going to have to link back to her notes, because Canada's been getting hit really hard with aquaculture and salmon. So
right.
Yeah, you kind of can see how the Faroe Islands can pick up.
Right, and there's this phase-out happening in British Columbia, which, you know, it's not fake complete. I don't know if it's actually going to happen, but... That's what the government of Canada, mm-hmm. the federal government.
There's just a lot up in the air in Canada that somebody's got to pick this up. So that's interesting that the Faroe Islands are...
Right. But the main takeaway is there's a lot of Atlantic salmon hitting the market. There's a lot of demand for it, too. And so, yeah, that was quite interesting.
Yeah, and salmon, too. They said that, well, the tariffs have disrupted the seafood market. Salmon is still in the sweet spot, especially when compared to other species like shrimp and tilapia. And this was from an analysis from Kontali. Ragnar Nistal, he said the average tariff for salmon is actually less than 10% with Canada, and this compares to 30% for warm water shrimp and 25% for tilapia. So he said it's not as disruptive as others. He said there will be a shifting period. So that I thought that was also interesting to note about, you know, that sweet spot with the tariff. Now, before we continue with more talk, I just want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, Wise Fish. Running a seafood business means dealing with a lot of moving parts. Farms, catches, production, sales, and logistics. Each often has its own systems and spreadsheets. Wise Fish brings it all together. Purpose built for aquaculture and seafood companies, Wise Fish connects biological and financial data so you can see costs, yields, and profitability clearly. The platform tracks feed, treatments, biomass growth, mortality, labor, and equipment costs, then ties it all to the harvest and sales planning. Instead of spending time reconciling reports and checking for errors, your team can focus on what matters, making smart, timely decisions that drive growth. Trusted by seafood businesses worldwide, Wise Fish is how the industry moves from guesswork to visibility. Learn more at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent. Okay, so moving on to more day two coverage.
Okay. Did you have any standouts from day two? I know for me, it was a lot of retail talk. We went into more food service. I know I asked you a question, but I'm going to jump in. I'm going to tell you what my thoughts were.
Yeah.
Because you didn't get to sit in on this presentation that I just sat in on. And it was with Chris Dubois, and you got to hear him speak a little bit earlier. He's from Circana, and he's actually one of my favorite speakers. You were at GSMC with us, so you've seen him speak at GSMC.
In Florida, I think.
Yeah, he's fantastic. And so he gave some insight on the growth of sushi, and it all comes down to that convenience factor again. And what he noted thought was really interesting is this shift in retail to get more sushi. You know, people are buying sushi at retail. More people are buying it in addition to just buying it at restaurants, which I thought that restaurant sushi snobs would be different from grocery sushi snobs. You're a sushi eater, are you?
I'm a sushi eater, and my children are sushi eaters. And it is a very convenient kind of thing if you're on the go and the kid's hungry and it's just in that little plastic case. You know.
So you get it from the grocery store?
I do. Mm-hmm. You just wash your hands and then you just cram it in your mouth in the car.
And so he's saying sushi at retail, it's been a thing, but now they're expanding to poke. And he said that they're actually, he gave the example of Kroger. They're making this huge new deli section and they're clearing out like parts of the bakery. And he said this is where seafood has a chance to really get in now with retail, is that there's more of a focus on the ready to eat. People want convenience. And if seafood can continue hammering this with the sushi, with the poke, things like that. And he was talking about mahi was a fish that was brought up a couple times this week. And he's like, you know, what's stopping somebody from opening up a little fish taco truck in the middle of a food store?
And one thing you see a lot with the sushi is, you know, it doesn't always actually even have to have raw seafood. You know, avocado rolls are very, very popular, they said. But also I've noticed, you know, there's a lot of surimi, that, you know, a lot of the imitation crab. And also cooked shrimp. So you'll see a lot of the offerings there. And I think one of the reasons they do that, not just because of cost, but because of shelf life.
Mm-hmm. So we're gonna actually have Matt Craze on. I'm gonna be doing a webinar with him in a few weeks, and he's with Spheric Research. And so he actually has this huge sushi report, and he just recently came back from Japan, and he was talking about how Japan is taking, that wasn't the avocado roll, those type of things were US born, and now they're becoming popular in Japan. And he said, what else is becoming popular? They're taking like other US things, they're putting cheese on their sushi now and on their salmon. And he showed us all, there's like a nacho cheese dip that you can get for like a tuna roll. And it was kind of interesting.
I don't find any of this surprising because it's been about 10 years, but actually Russia is kind of led the way. You know, in Russia, sushi has long been kind of a form of fast food.
Okay.
It's been really, really popular, and you'll see that kind of thing with like in the deli cases in the little supermarkets and things like that. Lots of just kind of little shopping mall, food court kind of things like that. It's the Russians really early adopted sushi as a convenient and healthy meal and snack.
Yeah, you know, and I hope to see more of it. I like the evolution into poke, and they showed, and maybe you have it, because you're in the Pacific Northwest, so do you have a Costco by you?
We do have Costco, yeah.
So they have so many different, I guess, prepared, it's not, I think you have to make them yourself, but they started adding poke bowls,
yeah.
And then do you have the black cod, the miso?
I know that we do. I don't have a Costco card, but I do know that they do have the black card.
Yeah. It's interesting to see what different areas of Costco's, and I'm curious to see.
They're a Seattle area chain, but they have a huge, huge following in, you know, the whole Pacific Northwest.
Yeah. But I'm curious, like New York, I feel like, is a big place for sushi. And I mean, Jersey's pretty close, but we don't have any of that yet in our Costco. So I'm curious to see. But it was kind of exciting to see where the future of seafood could go. And that's not the first time we've heard that it's convenience, that it's ready to eat, but it's cool to see that these retail stores are changing. They're actually changing for this, and that there's a way for seafood to kind of really step up.
Yep.
So we talked about retail. Let's talk about food service. One of the speakers was the chief supply chain officer at Red Lobster, Matthew Livesay. He, you know, he commented on responsible sourcing amid shifting supply chains. And I didn't realize is that they recently, Red Lobster, you know, they have over 500 chains now in the U.S. They recently added mahi-mahi to their menu. And then he's like, the resource went significantly down. And we just had this example where you have to be really nimble. And he said that, you know, while you could find mahi at almost every restaurant in the U.S. panhandle, he said there was a time where you couldn't find it on Red Lobster menus. And he said we just had to adjust. But I thought this was really interesting and a good takeaway for the seafood industry is that he said that like Red Lobster specifically, they're going to look into post-planning and to do analysis after the fact to see where things didn't transpire as planned. And then he said they're also going to be more proactive in terms of forecasting. You know, you would think that Red Lobster would be doing, but it's interesting to see how the wild, these wild fisheries, anything can really happen.
Yeah, and there was actually, there was a panel that I caught on the first day, and actually, and it talked about increasing transparency in the supply chain, and they had some IT consultants who just specialize in this, and it was an interesting talk because, you know, they said in order for it to be successful, it really has to have a top-down, really organized approach. If you just try to do like one section of your business or another, and if it's siloed, it just becomes like kind of extra work and you get bureaucratic pushback and things like that. But if you do it right and you can and make it useful for your different segments of your business, so they can actually share the information across divisions, it actually really increases productivity and you get a lot more buy-in. And like, I think they made the example, you know, your finance team, for example, they can see how things are moving in the supply chain. They can find ways to reduce cost. Your quality assurance team can find out ways to, you know, reduce risk. Your marketing team can use the data and like in more real time share with our campaigns to verify and, you know, validate the claims they use on sustainability. So actually it's a winning thing you can do, but you have to make sure that the data is shared across your different divisions inside your company, and it's not, like I said, siloed where it then just becomes like this extra task and just bogs everyone down. So that was an interesting conversation.
All right, we have so much more that we could talk about, but Jacob and I have to get ready for an after party. We've got dancing and stuff to go to in Columbia. So we're just going to encourage everyone to check out the live blog of our GSA coverage, jam-packed. Yesterday on day one, we had 11 blog posts. I lost track of what we did on day two. And then we have original content coming in on top of that is going to be going into next week. So check that out. Links in the show notes. But before we go, a final word from our sponsor, Wisefish. From egg to plate, Wisefish supports seafood businesses in aquaculture, fisheries, processing, and sales with one integrated platform. Trusted by companies worldwide, including Tassel and Nilspare, Wisefish helps control costs, improve margins, and make smarter financial decisions. Learn more at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent.